You're recording.
Before we were interrupted, I was just going to suggest to the board that because this case just involves a human error on the part of the technician and not anything medically that fell below the standard of care on behalf of Dr. Demonte, that this may be a case where a letter of concern would be appropriate. Thank you.
Okay, so we've heard from the respondent. Next up, we have the complainants here. Would you care to address the board? Please state your names for the record.
Patricia Nichols.
My name is James Nichols.
Thank you. And I'll give you 5 minutes to address the board.
I'm here today to seek justice for my 10-month-old puppy, Mia. The pets we have in our homes are totally dependent upon us for their food, water, shelter, and the comfort of family. When a pet is under anesthesia, they are totally helpless, depending solely upon the vet and technicians to protect their life while they're in this vulnerable state. We put our faith and trust in the professional knowledge of the vet to carry out the necessary procedure with the utmost regard for the pet's safety and well-being. There should be a standard of procedure of checks and balances by the vet and technicians to ensure, among other things, ventilation equipment runs properly and anesthesia is administered correctly. But this was not the case with Mia, our healthy 10-month-old puppy. Dr. Demonte was not present when anesthesia was administered, even though we informed the technician about using a different method of sedating Mia. Dr. Demonte never spoke with us to discuss our concerns, and being aware of our concerns, she was not present and did not supervise the poorly trained technicians when they were administering anesthesia. Neither Dr. Demonte nor the technicians checked the pop-off valve on the breathing machine to make sure it was open. Dr. Demonte was not present until being alerted that Mia had stopped breathing and was in cardiac arrest. At that point, Mia could not be revived. Dr. Demonte was not present for 3 to 5 minutes while our precious Mia suffocated to death. Where were the checks and balances for Mia that day? We put our trust and faith in the professional knowledge and experience of Dr. Demonte and the technicians to carry out a procedure with checks and balances to ensure Mia's safety and well-being. In Mia's case, this trust and faith was violated in the worst possible way through gross negligence, carelessness, and incompetence. The only time we spoke with Dr. Demonte was when she called us at home to inform us that Mia had stopped breathing and was not responding to resuscitation. All she wanted was our consent to stop resuscitation. There was no explanation of what happened, only the cold, matter-of-fact way of asking for our consent to stop resuscitation. We were told by the office manager, Hillary Ponder, that we would be getting a call from Dr. Demonte. She has never had the decency to call us. When someone has been a practicing vet as long as Dr. Demonte, further training should not be the answer. Everything needed for proper procedure, critical checks and balances should have been learned in the beginning when she acquired her license to be a vet. A vet that shows this kind of incompetence after years of practicing veterinarian medicine should not be allowed to keep their license. It would be morally wrong to allow this to happen to another pet and have another family undergo the tragedy and horror we have endured. Dr. Demonte is no stranger to this process today, having been here several times. Now the ultimate has happened, the death of a puppy due to her gross negligence, her carelessness, and her incompetence. Please do the right thing today by revoking her license permanently so that this will never happen to another puppy or animal in her care.
Do you have anything to add?
Yes, I just want to say, in counter to what Dr. Demonte said earlier, when we first arrived, when we got to the facility, after, you know, what happened, we were told what happened. We were told by the office manager of the errors and the mistakes that had been made immediately when we got there. She told us what had happened. And she said that Dr. Demonte, as in her, what she read, that she wasn't in the room. She left to get a, instrument. I don't know why. Seems like you'd either have all what you need on hand right away, or a technician could have gone to get it. It was in the necropsy report. It says that at 12:32 they noticed she was not, or didn't have a heartbeat. They didn't start resuscitation until 12:35. That's 3 minutes later. What happened in that 3 minutes? There's something really weird going on with the time here, okay? Other than checking everything before the procedure, the checks and balances, and make sure everything's working right, even during, there's something wrong with the time here. Something is not right. So we're going by what we were told by the office manager, and that's what we put in our report and everything else that we've submitted. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You step back. Dr. Thompson, you are the lead on these two cases.
Yes, thank you. So for case 2236, it's definitely a heartbreaking case for folks involved. My condolences to the family. After going through all of the records, the reports, listening to the investigative reports, you know, their recommendation on gross negligence, I can see where they're coming from in that frame of mind. It is our responsibility as veterinarians to make sure that our equipment is working well. But I also do have some other questions, and I guess this is a big case, and I would like the insight of other board members from what you've seen. It is human error, but there are some other questions as far as who is responsible for observing the technicians, what type of training do they have, the timing of the pre-meds to induction. Like, I have a lot of questions on how the whole procedure works. I'm just kind of reaching out to you guys to see if you have questions as well.
I would agree. There's some unanswered questions here. I think we'd shed some light on what may have happened or where the problems are. So I would agree. I would agree totally. There are more questions.
Yes, and making a ruling on this is a very big decision, so I think it would be best to go, I would make a move to go to an informal review on this.
Second. The motion on the floor is second to move case 2236 to an informal. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Oh,
aye.
Go ahead. Was there discussion on the phone?
Aye. Rebecca.
Okay. All those in opposed? And the ayes have it. That case will move to an informal. And 2237.
So I would, it's very easy to say probably recommendations, but what I've learned in listening to cases where there's a two-pack, we need to get all of the information from the first case first before we make a ruling on the second. I feel that while the recommendation from the investigative committee was to dismiss with no charges, as a premise holder, you have responsibilities, and I think that we might identify some things in the informal hearing from the first case that may change what that direction is on that. So I'm not exactly sure if we would say we want an informal hearing on that or just push that case to after we have heard the other.
You do it either way. But if you want the premise holder to be here,
then yes.
Then Informal would be the...
Yes, then I would move that to an informal as well.
Second.
All right, so a motion on the floor and a second to move 2237 to an informal. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And opposed? That motion passes. That case will move to an informal. Show Dr. Wright has rejoined us, and we are on another two-pack, 2239 and 2240. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes. So, confirm that these are the same. So, the summaries are the same. So, case 2239 is Jatin Jogwani, DVM, and the case 2240 is Kaylee Robinson, DVM, and the complainant is Elena Pritchard. On September 28, 2021, Emma, an approximately 5 to 7 year old female pit bull, was presented to First Pet Veterinary Centers on emergency after being attacked by another dog in the home. The dog was evaluated by Dr. Jogwani, an IV catheter was placed, and pain medications were administered. Diagnostics, including radiographs and blood work, were performed and recommendations for hospitalization were approved. The dog was started on supportive care and compression bandages were placed over some of the bleeding wounds. Later that evening, the dog was sedated to evaluate the dog bite wounds. Some wounds were debrided, some were stapled closed, and others were left open to drain. The dog was hypothermic and heat support was provided. Later, the dog's care was transferred to Dr. Robinson for overnight care and monitoring. After evaluation, Dr. Robinson made some adjustments to the treatment plan based on her findings. A short time later, the dog was found unresponsive. CPR was unsuccessful and the dog passed away. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred in case 22-39. It was moved and seconded the board find errors 322232, medical incompetence, failure to stabilize the dog prior to addressing the dog's wounds, inadequately addressing the volume needs of the dog, and inadequately assessing the extent of and severity of the wounds. ARS 3222-18, as it relates to R311-502-H2, for failure to examine the dog within 6 hours before anesthesia was administered or surgery was performed, and document the animal's temperature, heart rate, respiration rate, diagnosis, and general condition in the medical record. And ARS 3222-18, as it relates to R311-502-H3, for failure to record the dog's heart rate, respiratory rate, and the medical record immediately after giving the animal a general anesthetic and monitored and recorded every minimum of every 15 minutes while anesthesia is being administered. And the motion was approved with a vote of 5-0. And case 2240, the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded for dismiss this issue, no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0. In case 2239, Dr. Jogwani and his attorney did submit a surgical monitoring sheet for that evening.
So we have both respondents. Let's take them one at a time. Do 2239 first. Please state your names for the record.
You can speak. Oh, Dr. Jatin Jogwani. And David Stoll, appearing as Dr. Jogwani's attorney.
Thank you. And you may have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Good morning. I would like to thank you for giving me this opportunity to respond to the investigative committee's recommendations in this case. I have been an emergency veterinarian for 2 years and enjoy the medical challenges associated with this practice. I've completed a small animal rotating internship, which was based heavily on emergency services. It was during this internship that I developed a passion for emergency medicine. My emergency medical training has included emergency stabilization of critical patients, many emergency procedures, and frequently emergency wound management and debridement. Regarding this case, I respectfully disagree with the committee's suggestion that I was medically incompetent for failing to stabilize Emma and addressing her volume needs and assessing her wounds. Regarding Emma, the patient in this case, she did in fact receive fluid therapy, pain medications, broad spectrum antibiotics, radiographs, a neurologic exam, heat support, ophthalmic exam, serial blood pressure monitoring, pulse oximetry, ECG monitoring, as well as repeated assessment for ongoing hemorrhage. This was all appropriate standards of care. Emma's case was complicated, both in terms of her traumatic injuries as well as the unusual findings of her necropsy report. It is clear from the comments made by the committee members, Dr. Ryan and Dr. Dow, during the public case discussion that this was not a black and white case. This is true for many dog bite wound injuries, as both the severity and complications can vary widely. While Dr. Dow stated that I should have stabilized Emma for a longer duration on IV fluids and performed the surgery on her at a later time, Dr. Rai expressed concerns that I did not address the wound soon enough and that I did not explore the wound sufficiently to look for the bleeding in the subscapular or brachial plexus. These are two contradictory conclusions, and it is difficult to see a path to this case that would have been deemed appropriate to see by both committee members. While Emma was sedated under my care, I personally evaluated the wounds, and there was no signs of arterial bleeding at the time. At the time of wound assessment, there was no need to further open the axillary region and potentially cause further damage and bleeding in the brachial plexus. Of course, I do not disagree that Emma had undergone traumatic tissue damage, so there was some blood loss, which is seen in the form of oozing from the traumatized muscle, but the visual appearance of blood loss often overstates the true amount of blood lost. This is also supported by Emma's lab results. Her entry hematocrit and total solids on entry at 7:15 was 48 and 6.0 with the hemoglobin of 17.1. When the PCV total solids was reevaluated approximately 5 hours later, there was evidence of some blood loss and hemodilution from fluids, but it was certainly not profound at 44% and 4.0. Unfortunately, in veterinary medicine, we do not have extensive case studies for many conditions. However, it is well documented in human trauma medicine that an early drop in hemoglobin within 30 minutes of admission to the emergency department is strongly associated with the need for emergency interventions to stop the hemorrhage. Human and canine normal hemoglobin levels are similar, and by extrapolation, Emma did not show signs of excessive hemorrhage on either early or late hematocrit and PCV evaluation. According to Emma's necropsy report, she would have had to have lost approximately 40% of blood volumes to attribute her death directly to exsanguination. I had no reason to believe that Emma had lost anywhere close to that amount of blood. Her bleeding was controlled with the application of pressure using a bandage. In fact, the necropsy report does not support the assertion that Emma died due to either inappropriate stabilization for hemorrhage or wound care. However, what it does highlight is that Emma had other underlying problems which could have contributed to her unfortunate passing. In the necropsy report, there were 4 findings which support the fact that Emma had significant comorbidities that neither myself nor her owners knew about. First, there is evidence of severe chronic morphological changes in the heart and lungs supportive of pulmonary hypertension. Second, there is evidence in multiple organs of granulomatous disease. Third, there is evidence of chronic abnormal coagulation as manifested by the large renal infarction. And lastly, there is evidence of abnormal gastric contents that were not identifiable by the pathologist. If I had all of this information at the time of presentation, would I have treated her differently? Perhaps. I think we would agree that we would treat many cases differently based on retrospective data and known outcome. But in this case, as with most cases, we can have no idea if there would be a better outcome regardless. I did not have this information, and I treated her in a manner that I believe is consistent with the standards of medical care, and a manner in which I have applied to similar cases with good results. As for the 2 proposed violation regulations, I believe the investigative community was mistaken with respect to the proposed violation of regulation R311-502H2 because a physical exam was conducted within 6 hours before the anesthetic procedure. Specifically, the triage notes reflect that Emma was examined and a TPR was performed at 6:45 p.m. The anesthetic procedure then commenced 3 hours and 22 minutes later at 10:07 p.m. when Emma was induced. Finally, with regard to the proposed violation of regulation R311-502H3, I submit that the regulation was not violated as demonstrated in the submitted anesthesia monitoring sheet that because Emma's heart rate, respiration rate, and temperature were monitored and recorded every 5 minutes during the procedure. Again, thank you for letting me address you here today.
Thank you.
Thank you. I guess I will ask the complainant, do you want to go twice for each case, or you want to wait till the second one and go once?
Just go once.
Okay. So let's hear from the respondent in 2240. Please state your name for the record.
Dr. Kaylee Robinson.
And David Stoll, appearing as legal counsel for Dr. Robinson.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you for letting me address the board today. Even though I agree with the investigative committee's decision to dismiss this case, I do have a few things I would like to say. First of all, I would like to express my condolences to the Pritchett family. It is always heart-wrenching when we lose a pet. They are our loved ones. In the emergency field, we do experience this more than other departments due to the critical nature of our patients. I have been an emergency veterinarian for my entire career of nearly 5 years, and prior to this incident, I was a full-time overnight emergency doctor for 2 years prior to this incident. Dr. Jadwani transferred me this case immediately after rounds, went to examine Emma. I made adjustments as I saw fit when I examined her. The investigative committee had mentioned they were concerned that she was only scheduled to receive monitoring every 4 hours. And I told them, and I would like to mention now, that we do take the temperature, pulse, respiration, the TPR as we call it, every 4 hours on critically ill patients, but we do monitor them in between that informally. And I believe that this is clear because Emma was found at 1:21 a.m. by the ICU technician who had walked by her cage and noticed that something was wrong at a time when we were not scheduled to be monitoring her. Clear that we do monitor in between those times. The necropsy report also gave evidence that Emma was not otherwise healthy, but we did nothing that Dr. Jadwani or myself could have predicted at the time when we were examining her. It is always heart-wrenching when we lose a pet, but I do agree with the committee that I did not neglect Emma in any way, and she was always treated with standard of care.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I'll hear from the complainant. Please come forward. Are both of you going to talk?
I'm just here for support.
So, well, go ahead and state your name anyway.
Irina Prichet.
And
Dr. Maureen Kirk.
Thank you. I'll give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
I just would like to say thank you so much for considering my case. We miss Emma very much. And nothing could replace Emma. So I hope this is a learning opportunity to stop this tragedy for another family. That's all.
Thank you. Dr. Wright, you are the lead on both of these cases.
Yes, I am. Thank you. So, listening to the testimony, of course, there's a lot of questions. It's a sad case. These are always hard. Dog bite wounds or any kind of traumatic injury doesn't always go the way we want it to. The question is there fault of the medicine here, or is this just a process in the body that unfortunately played out, and there is not much we can do to intervene? In hindsight, there's always things we can do to try and change in a case, but in the moment, was there major problems here in this case? And that's kind of the big question here. I mean, I definitely would love some opinions from the other veterinarians, because I see the approach here and I can see some potential modifications and other choices of medications, but I mean, was what was done here incorrect? I mean, does this raise to a level of incompetence? And that's where I'm having a hard time with this, because I don't see glaring problems. I see again, variations of what can be done, but I don't see glaring statute violations and issues here. Unfortunately, getting to an emergency clinic doesn't guarantee an outcome. I mean, people die in the hospital all the time. This is just a sad part of how the body works, especially after a very bad traumatic incident. So I would love some input on there. I do have a question about the TPR, because when I'm looking through the medical records, I'm not seeing it. Did anybody see an actual temperature, pulse, respiration, or was that missed? Because I'm not finding that portion. I see now the anesthetic monitoring, and that makes me happy that was done and just not submitted at the time, but I'm still not seeing that initial physical exam TPR. Am I just missing it? Is anybody else seeing that? Okay, I just want to make sure. So, I mean, that's the issue that I'm seeing here, but beyond there, I would definitely love some input from anybody else on the medical portion of it.
I think the question here, was there anything improper done in terms of evaluating this particular patient and the obvious tissue damage that we had? Was there not enough importance placed on the amount of the tissue damage and its location when proceeding with the case? So I have some questions there. Also, there are a lot of things that can happen with tissue damage that have nothing to do with blood loss. So was it not enough attention paid to that particular problem? And then the other question I would have is whether it was appropriate to proceed with the attention to the wounds at this time. Did I not read in there that there was some possible head trauma? There was some other things going on with this dog. And the question I have is, was it appropriate to proceed in the way that the respondent did in this case? Or would it have been appropriate to take a different approach with more stabilization, more evaluation, prior to proceeding with sedation and wound care?
Yeah, I agree with the latter part there. It's always that question, you know, what is the most important thing to address? And stabilization is definitely key, right? Especially since the wounds, it sounds like we're closing them with skin staple. Like it didn't sound like the pressing thing. And when you do have those other concerns, it's just that order of business.
But even like you said, there's difference in opinion from a medical standpoint. It's like, is there a true standard answer, or is that all opinion? I mean, can we have an actual medical conclusion of saying this was wrong, or is that how I would just approach it differently? And if I would approach it differently, is that actually an incompetence issue, or is that just a difference of opinion?
That's
where I'm having a lot
that's
of problems with mm-hmm. this, because again, if we gave a totally incorrect drug, if we gave a totally incorrect dose or something like that, I would say, yeah, that's incompetent. If you made a different decision on how to try and save this patient's life in the moment, that's not incompetence to me. That's a far stretch for me. At the most, I mean, that's a letter of concern at the most, because that's, again, there's no true answer. It's, we want to get to an endpoint, which pathway do we take? And sometimes the pathway is the wrong one, but is it the wrong one because we screwed up, or is it the wrong one because it's just, that's how things turned out? And that's where, like I said, the level of incompetence is just pretty darn high, and I don't see incompetence here. I mean, is there concern? Sure. But incompetence is just a high bar for me.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of quick questions for the DVMs on the board, as I am a layperson and a public member. For the definition of triage, is there a medically acceptable standard? And is stabilization at the top of that list?
I mean, yeah, you need to stabilize a patient one way or the other, because if they're not stable, if they're not gonna live, what are you gonna do? So stabilization is important. I mean, that's definitely a critical thing, but what level of stabilization? I mean, that's kind of the question there is when you're dealing with it, is like, is it okay, yeah, we're alive, we're doing well, let's go in and fix this, or yeah, we're back out there doing backflips, now we can kind of go in and stitch things up. So what's the level of stabilization? What do you do to address the trauma? And like I said, trauma is not just a one-time incident. It happens over time, tissue starts to die off, things start happening, the stressful things in the body, and that can happen much longer after the fact. I mean, it happens with gunshot wounds. You see they're initially stable, and all of a sudden, 6-8 hours later, they start crashing. That happens in trauma. Trauma is a very bad thing. So, like I said, I'm really having a hard time with that. The TPR thing, I definitely just don't see any way around that. I mean, there's a violation there. I'm not seeing that it was done there, but that's the only violation I'm seeing. And is this something we need to proceed with, or?
This was just given to me.
Okay, so you have that there. Go back to what was submitted real quick so I can see.
Yeah, I'll show you when it comes.
Okay. Because I have the patient history report, and this is the medical record report.
That's the only thing I saw was maybe I'm.
Let's see where that is here. Okay, so we don't have.
Keep going down. It's kind of buried in there.
So 9/29 now. This is the day before. Oh, okay. So here's.
There
okay.
It is. It's, yeah, kind of.
Oh,
it's
way
different.
Down. Oh, wow. That's.
It's different than this than the one that was given.
And why was it put after 1/35 on 9/29?
It looks
okay.
Like it was an addendum added.
Yeah.
Later.
Those added 6/45 and 9/28, so that's still within the total. Or 10/1, I should 10/1. Say. Yeah, that's still yeah. Adequate. Okay, so that's there. So,
the end of time.
It just says here, but then it may be.
Okay, yeah, so it is in there. It's just in a weird location for it because of the addendum. But again, that's still within the acceptable time, in my opinion, of doing that. I mean, I would always say 10 days since that's kind of the medical request thing. So, this is an unfortunate outcome, but is there truly an issue here? And that's where I'm having a crux. And
well, I guess I would ask, is there further questions that we could ask that would help us define this situation a little better?
And I don't have any personally, not that I can think of at this point. So I mean, if anybody else has questions, I think we can proceed, but I honestly don't have anything that can clarify this for me. So, is there a letter of concern level? But I just think this is an unfortunate outcome. So, seeing the reports, I mean, it would have been nicer if that stuff was submitted in the first place. That would have saved a huge amount of headaches. So I hope that people have a take-home message for there. Don't submit everything. I mean, don't miss anything. But now that we have the full and complete medical record, I can't see an actual violation here. So I'll make a motion to dismiss this with no violation.
Second.
A motion on the floor and a second to dismiss 2239 with no violations. Any further discussion? I guess I would like to hear more about the, and of course I would like to see it tested, the autopsy report, the findings, the stomach contents in particular,
yeah,
that weren't identifiable.
Yeah. Yeah, there was the necropsy definitely added a couple more questions on, but again, was it things that would have changed at that time? Not that I see. But I agree with you. It's like
to be litigated.
Yeah.
For the respondent.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only curiosity in my mind is what about all those other things that they found that weren't related to the trauma,
mm-hmm,
or hemorrhaging or anything else.
Well, and one of the things we always say is necropsy reports can give us a lot of answers, and this did give us a lot of other answers.
Raise questions, and sometimes you don't get what you want.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not seeing anything that's actually saying that the medicine was screwed up on the necropsy.
There are contradictions, Mr. Chairman, in some of the reporting and what we heard in the investigative committee. One said there was little to no loss of blood, and then it was noted that there was too much of a loss of blood. So as a layperson, it's kind of like, which is?
It can be really hard in evaluating how much blood is lost and how much blood can you lose to be kind of critical. I mean, one of the jokes, which we really shouldn't joke around with surgery, one of the jokes you say in surgery is unless you can hear the blood, it's not too much. I mean, it's amazing how much a tiny little vessel can bleed. You go in there and you stop it and you're fine. But I mean, if blood's pouring on the ground, yeah, it's probably a bad situation. So it's a very subjective thing, but it's amazing how much blood you can actually see, and it's like, it's just some blood. I mean, blood is a crazy thing, and the body to be able to compensate is a crazy thing, as long as you have the actual fluid volume. And again, we had fluids going, and it was adjusted based on the signs that we were seeing as the case progressed.
And serial monitor.
Yeah, so like I said, it's definitely unfortunate, sad, but like I said, was this the fault of anybody, or was this just how an outcome from a dog fight was gonna happen? I personally lost dogs in a dog fight a long time ago. I had a senior dog, and she did not make it through. And it was just a misunderstanding between two dogs over a dead bird in the backyard. Dog fights happen, and unfortunately it's just hard, and they can fight to the death sometimes.
Mr. Chairman, I still have some outstanding questions about that need to be asked of the respondent as well as the other veterinarians on board. Like, are drains standardly in place, put in place before closing a topical, a skin wound that's perceived to be a skin wound? What kind of assessment was done of the subcutaneous potential damage? I would rather see this go more informal.
When you have some kind of trauma like this, just maybe try and answer some of it. There's not a whole lot of standard, because there's not a standard dog bite. There's not a standard tear in the skin. There's a standard splenic removal. There's a standard lung tumor approach, but there's not really a standard for gunshots or bites or that kind of stuff. So you kind of have to assess it as needed. And it really is a very subjective approach to how much trauma was underlying it, how much actual dead space is there, meaning space that can fill up with fluid and all that. So I understand the questions there, but that's a very difficult one to answer, because there's not a standard dog bite like there is for other standards of diseases. So
even
it's
for cat bites.
Yeah, cat bites, no, antibiotics, that's a standard. But it's good questions there. It's just that's in my opinion, that's a difficult one to answer, because you have to approach each traumatic case individually.
But. All right, so the motion on the floor and the second is to dismiss 2239. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
So let's do your roll call.
All right. Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Mr. Lohi?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Nay.
Ms. Solomon?
Nay.
Dr. Thompson?
Nay.
And Dr. Wright is an aye. The motion carries.
All right, 2239 is dismissed. Next up is 2240.
All right, just going right in there. All right, let me pull that one up again. Next page. So yeah, again, we've kind of hashed what's going through here, in the case in regards to Dr. Robinson, I don't see any issues going on there. So I agree with the investigative committee to dismiss this with no violation. Yes.
Second. Motion on the floor and a second to dismiss 2240. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2240 dismissed. Thank you, everybody, for participating today. Next up, Victoria, you didn't send me my little sheet, so when we get to something,
yes,
tell me.
Okay. I'm going to get it for you at the break.
Okay. All right, so next up is 2275. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
The complaint that is available by phone. Victoria, do I have my call sheet in there? Findings with her regarding the cause of death of her two dogs, Sadie, a three-year-old female French bulldog, and a puppy from Zoe, a two-year-old female chihuahua. This case did not go in front of the investigative committee. It was brought straight to you for your review and discussion.
Thank you. So we have the respondent. Would you care to address the board?
Yes, sir.
Sorry, talking to me. I'm sorry.
You were the complainant, so you're next.
Okay.
Larry Hudman.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes to address the board.
I'm sorry, sir?
Up to 5 minutes to address the board.
I have a situation where one lady was bringing the dogs into us. Nobody really told or showed that we had co-ownership. And we were going by the one that we dealt with on what was going on. On one dog, it went for a C-section at the 12th of May. The dog died on the 15th. We sent it out for a postmortem. Died of septicemia, which we had not seen that dog until about 60 days prior to that. The other dog was one that we, same type situation. We did a reproductive exam, did a couple of progesterones to find out best day to breed, and we saw her brought to us secondary to, and she was dead with pregnancy toxemia. I was told by Aria Wolf that this is her dog and you need to talk to her, and that's kind of where I was standing. Probably should have listened and said, okay, can I talk to the other one? And she said, no, that's not where we're going. So what we're looking at is, on both of these, I did not see them until they were deceased. So I didn't do the C-section. I didn't see the dog with pregnancy toxemia, where it came in, you know, very, very thin. We did send out both dogs out for necropsy. Both showed problems that had occurred while the dogs were under Aria Wolf's care. Never saw them when, except for when they were good and then when they're dead. So when you're not asked for any care, it's kind of hard to know what's going on. And I do apologize for not getting back to the other owner, because I didn't know that where we stood on those ownerships. The person that brought it in to me was the one that was claiming to be the owner of it, and that's where we are.
Thank you. Now we have the complainant on the phone. Would you please state your name for the record?
Caitlin Wright.
Thank you. And you can have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay. I've been watching my case, Dr. Hogan knew baby narcolepsy came back, and that your client, Aria Wolf, had it wrong. And she cut all communication with me from that moment forward. I feel like your morale on being in bed went out the window so you could continue to have Aria as a client. Instead of calling me with my doctor's results, you ignored my calls, my emails, and kept my name off all the charts. You called and spoke directly with me after baby had passed, and you knew 100% I was her and Zoe's owner. The whole ordeal has been very confusing on yours and Aria's story as to what happened leading up to her death. Aria says she died in your care. You say that she was dead upon arrival. You both told me you didn't x-ray baby, but the narcolepsy states they all did x-rays before she had been moved to Midwestern Pathology Center. So I'm just curious as to when her words came back and you saw her cause of death, why I would be still if I didn't deserve to see the truth. You write her for any of the cause of death was due to inadequate nutrition? And is this because you saw her state when she came in, you saw she was malnourished, you reassured me that she looked okay when she came in, and the 5 second clip I received from Aria before she passed, you can clearly see her spine and that she looked very gray and unhealthy. I guess I'm just confused on your decision to her bed and on the oath you took to represent Hamill. As the owner, you completely disregarded the fact that I deserve to know the truth. And just maybe Aria Wolf isn't who she represents herself to be. You should have expressed your concern over those words instead of trying to present the rest to continue her as a client. If there was nothing to hide or have concerns of, on my dog, she should have never denied me access and request to a subpoena for my dog's file. I'll conclude with you as the vet are the reason Aria has on-hand medications at home for her use if she deems necessary. She has stated and told me numerous times that you give her a name. Those puppies were never seen prior to hearing her treating them with the carbonite handed over by your office. She never even weighed my puppies to see how much she gives them before she was giving them carbonite. I do believe you give Aria Wolf entirely too much freedom, and if the situation between itself that she is your partner instead of a client. And so I'm back.
Thank you. Ms. Frost, you are the lead on this case.
I am. So I did review the complaint the email communication, the medical records provided, you know, to respond. This is a very emotional case that, you know, the loss of pets is heartbreaking, and even in this case, this veterinarian wasn't even involved in the passing of the pets, and there was a necropsy offer, which I commend because we don't always see that. So there is information now. It seems to be that the complaint is twofold. One, there is an authorized agent who presented the pet, which is the person listed on the medical records, which is what a veterinarian would have to work with. And then there is an absentee owner who, you know, is not able to be present. But that's really hard to confirm. And so it seems as though, you know, there was communications that, you know, you're not listed on the records, and you know, there were things going back and forth. So it sounds like there was miscommunication, you know, that the doctor is trying to do their best, and I really don't see a violation at all from the veterinarian standpoint. There's some other accusations in there that aren't founded in this case, and again, it's very emotional, and unfortunately, I think a veterinarian getting drug into a situation between two individuals that was either not a great relationship or out of hand. So in this case, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
A motion on the floor and a second to dismiss 2275. Is there any further discussion? I guess I would just point out that this is really a, has nothing to do with veterinary medicine and everything to do with contract law and the ownership dispute, and it's a civil matter that is not under the purview of this agency. Unfortunate, but has nothing to do with veterinary medicine or the practice of veterinary medicine. Any other discussion? All those, the motion on the floor is to dismiss. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2275 is dismissed. Thank you everyone for participating today. Ms. Bray, you could disconnect now.
Okay, thank you.
Next up, we are